And how would our fictional time traveller react to the astounding comfort of our homes, well insulated against drafts and storms, rain and snow, frost and heat waves, warmed or cooled at the twist of a dial? They would wonder at the fact that few of us go hungry, selecting from a smorgasbord of specialty foods from five continents, where they were formerly reserved only as festival dishes. They might be surprised that we don't smell, or at least that we can choose to wash or not, as and when we like, night or day, not by trekking down to an icy river, but from water plumbed right into our homes and warmed for our comfort. Perhaps we too should marvel more often at how our near-miraculous, yet now commonplace built infrastructure has given us access to nature's richness within our own homes. All these technologically enabled domestic conveniences exist for the simple purposes of plugging us into a deeper and more fundamental natural infrastructure. After a morning spent grappling with the complexities of the three Greek genders, my brain was reduced to mush. Whilst it was perfectly logical that the declinable article preceding the name of my good friend Spiros was masculine, I struggled to get to grips with the concept of random things such as bunches of spinach, bicycles, and egg cups having assigned sexes. It was all terribly confusing. It had just been drilled into me during class that, linguistically, a sheep was male. But what if I happened across a ewe in my stroll through the village? Should I address it as male or female? I couldn't even pick Marigold's brain since she'd skipped our weekly Greek lesson in favour of her monthly get-together with the Greek ladies of the village to beautify the cemetery. These meetings appeared to involve rather more coffee drinking and gossip than actual weeding, but provided a great opportunity for my wife to develop new friendships in the community of Melli. The mountain village of Melli had been our new home since upping sticks from Manchester to a new life in the sun almost 3 months ago, and we were keen to integrate into village life. Paradise Lost was published in August 1667 by Samuel Simmons. Within 2 years, it had sold almost 4,000 copies. It was one of the best sellers of the century. Royalties, in the modern understanding of a writer's percentage of sales, were not a feature of 17th century publishing. The printer-publisher made the object and sold it. The writer was paid mainly in advance for its contents. By 1669, Milton had received £20, roughly one-tenth of his annual salary as a Cromwellian civil servant. He would spend his remaining years in a state of relative poverty, while being celebrated as a poet almost beyond compare. At the beginning of the poem, he seeks the aid of the heavenly muse in his great task. One wonders if he is already aware of the paradoxical relationship between what he was about to do and what he had already done, been, and experienced.